Hello, I'm B'nai Naudin, and this is The Process. The land of the swift-moving water known as Willimantic is a small town in eastern Connecticut. During its heyday, spanning from the mid-19th century through the first half of the 20th, it was a commercial hub thanks to the dozens of textile and thread mills that had sprung up along its river. Dubbed the Thread City, Willimantic boasted hotels, movie palaces, shops, and a network of trains and trolleys that could take you to different towns and cities in the Northeast. Between the 1960s and 1980s, as the mills closed down, the town progressively lost its luster. It hit rock bottom at the end of the millennium after the last of American Thread's mills shut its doors and moved south. For nearly two decades, Willimantic struggled to regain its footing. During that time, its citizens came together in efforts to breathe new life into the former Thread City. Jean Desmet is one of the dozens of people whose activism has worked to turn things around and usher in a sort of renaissance. As a longtime resident, Jean has been involved in a variety of civic activities relating to environmental protection and recycling, energy, economic development, community revitalization, architectural preservation, and culture. She has been an active member of a myriad of local organizations such as the Willimantic Victorian Neighborhood Association, Wyndham Regional Arts Council, Willimantic Whitewater Partnership, Wyndham Parent Network, Wyndham Garden Club, the Wyndham History and Textile Museum, Joshua's Trust Conservancy, Wyndham Habitat for Humanity. She has run for office and is probably best known for initiating Third Thursday, which attracts visitors from all around the state and beyond during the months of May through September. When I asked Jean how to pronounce her last name, she gave me several answers. Desmet, sometimes Desmet, others Desmet. She said that anyway was fine by her, which is an indication of her easygoing nature, which, no doubt, has helped her accomplish the things that she's accomplished. I hope you enjoy my interview with Jean Desmet. 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 I'm here today with Jean Desmet, who is a figure of Willimantic, has been an important figure for many, many years. She is the creator, or one of the creators of Third Thursday, and that's really what we hope to focus on. But Jean has a varied, varied career and list of activities that she pursues. So, Jean, welcome, first of all.
Thank you.
You have an unusual trajectory, which appears to have several fits and starts. You started in one direction as a student. What were you doing when you were a young student?
Well, I went to Notre Dame, and I was I was a pre-med major because my father said, if you're going to college, you better do something worthwhile with your life. And he thought it was a very good idea that I become a doctor. I had no interest in being a doctor at all. And that was pretty much confirmed right away when I didn't do well in calculus. And I realized at Notre Dame that I would really rather party than sit and do chemistry and calculus. So I was under the influence of really wonderful philosophy professors there who pretty much persuaded me you should do what you follow your passion, follow your dream. And don't follow what somebody else tells you to do. So they kind of gave me the freedom to change to being an English major. But I couldn't go to Notre Dame anymore.
Now, why was that? Because
my father was not going to support somebody who's an English major.
Oh, I see.
Yes, that would be a waste of money. So actually, I fell in love and I got married. And my husband came to UConn getting his graduate degree in English. And so I came here as a student undergraduate and finished out here at UConn. It was an English degree.
So what were your plans, though, with English?
There aren't any, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, if you're an English major, you have to kind of give up on that career planning stuff. So I really didn't have any career plan. It was following my passion, and it seemed like such a wonderful idea. And it was a wonderful idea. And, you know, I think that it's true that that kind of liberal arts education really helps an individual think and understand and, you know, interpret people better, perhaps. Not that I'm great at body language interpreting. I was more of a bookie, but, you know, just hearing people and listening and being interested in human beings and humanity.
So did you have any extracurricular activities aside from the drinking?
I swam. No. Mostly I was just partying here.
All right. So
that was my career choice.
Who knew? We get all the secrets here.
Yeah.
Okay, so what ended up happening after you graduated?
So I ended up needing a job, and I got a job here, and I believe the company's still in business, NERAC, Northeast Community. I don't know what it stood for, but it was a horrible job. So I was down in a basement with no window, and I was a lousy typist. So I took the UConn test to be a secretary, the typing exam, and I think I got 35 on it. And so I was a clerk. So my job was to staple pieces of paper together. And it was really a very bad atmosphere and a very bad place to work. And the woman, older woman, who, it's funny, I don't think Audrey was that old now I think about it, but this older woman I worked with must have been 35, 40. She said, what would you do if you could do anything you want to do? And I was looking out a window at that point in time, and I said, I want to do that. And there was a construction site right across the street. And I said, I want to be there, because it was the opposite of what I was doing, right? I want to be outside. And I had taken, you know, a carpentry class, an adult ed or something like that. So I thought, well, maybe I should be a carpenter, because I made a bookshelf once. And Audrey was so great, and she used to push me, and she would get ads out of the newspaper, and she'd find things, and she'd say, go apply for this job. Go
this apply is, this for is this your job. Supervisor pushing you out of the job.
Oh,
that
yeah,
you're in.
Absolutely. She knew, we were all miserable. She wasn't happy either.
Oh, goodness.
So she said, I remember one interview I went to with a local builder. I won't name the names. So I go to the interview, and he asks, do you ski? I said, yeah. He goes, well, what do you do when it's like 2 degrees out? I said, I don't ski. And he said, wrong answer, go home. Because in construction, you have to be outside no matter what the weather is.
Ah.
And I hadn't thought about that. I was going to make a bookshelf with him. So I had no idea what construction was or anything about it. But at that point in time, there was just beginning to be the women's movement trying to get women in the trades. And so the unions were under a lot of pressure to accept women as apprentices. And I was accepted. I got a call one night saying, do you want to be an electrician? If you do, you have to come to this place and take a test. It's like, okay. And then the next night I got a call and said, do you want to be a plumber, from somebody else? And if you want to do that, you should come and take a test. So I was talking to my husband. I said, I don't know. Should I be an electrician or a plumber? Now, I have no idea what anyone does or what a trade is or anything, right? And he said, well, you know, think about what plumbing is. And I thought, oh, yeah, maybe I want to be an electrician. And so that's how I made my career choice.
Wow. So that's really kind of by chance, really.
Oh, very much by chance, yeah. So I just walked in the door in a pair of sneakers with no idea what I was doing, and they were very nice.
And you really made a career out of it.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. It's a great, I love working in the trades. It really was fortuitously a good choice for me. I love being outside. I loved working with my hands. And electrical work in particular has a lot of brain work, which, you know, you can do as much or as little of it as you like, but it can be very challenging in a lot of ways, physically challenging and mentally challenging. It's never boring. It's never the same thing twice.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy it.
So what kind of projects did you do? Were you working on big building projects? Or?
Yeah. So this is construction, not residential work at all. So, my last job I worked on was stores downtown. But I've worked here in stores a little bit, but mostly like hospitals, casinos, things like that, big industrial plants.
So you're laying down all the electrical wiring and getting all the fuse boxes set up and dealing with different types of lighting issues and...
Yeah. I don't deal so much with the issues because we're like putting in the lighting. So... Construction is pretty straightforward. It's I have a lot of respect for people who do residential and old work, which, you know, my heart, my knowledge of the environment tells me that we should do a lot more old work.
Uh-huh.
We should stop building new things, even though I spent my life doing that. And I didn't like working on old work because it's old and dirty. And
right, and precarious, too. You might break something while you're repairing something else.
Yeah. Exactly.
Everything kind of falls apart at the same time in a way.
You don't know what's behind the wall.
Right.
So it's much more straightforward. I won't say easier physically necessarily, but much more straightforward to go with the new work. And I really, I did well. I was well respected by my peers. I got elected as recording secretary of my union. So I served in that position for 6 years. And, I got along well with everybody. It was... interesting. I always thought it was a good thing I was an English major, though. I was thrown into an environment with people who I had no idea who these people were or where they came from. And in the union at that point in time, it was very much father-son. And I didn't know the players at all, but they all knew each other. And I had to understand this different culture, you know. It reminded me of going into Faulkner South or something, where I was all of a sudden in a very different place. And it was handy to be an English major.
Because that allowed you to communicate with different types of people?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Communicate, listen, understand, and appreciate all the differences. Also, as I pointed out to people occasionally, I can read. So sometimes things come with the directions. And it's really handy to be able to read and to read blueprints as well.
Uh-huh.
So that was a certain advantage I had.
When did the community activism start with you? When did you start getting involved in things beyond your work?
Yeah, right away, pretty much. So we moved to Willimantic right around when I graduated UConn, probably, to play softball and to drink beer.
Is that what was going on in Willimantic at the time?
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's exactly what was going on. I had never played softball, but there was a women's softball league just starting up, really. And they were looking for players. And it's like, oh, sure, that sounds like fun. And then we would all go out to Tony's afterwards.
You're a very open person, I can tell, from what you've said so far in terms of dealing with a lot of different people.
Yeah.
And also, obviously, appreciating people.
Mm. Yeah, I like to think so. I enjoy people. I think that you get so much back in terms of joy in your life, and it comes from being around others, to me.
Mm-hmm. So what were your sort of first steps in maybe local politics or organizing things? Or
right. So after we drank the beer, then the people on my team happened to be involved in local politics, and the right away, there was a big issue where there was an armory, and they wanted to turn the armory into a new recreation center, and there was a big battle about it. I was on the recreation center team for some reason. I didn't know what I was doing, but anyway, I got involved and started making phone calls, and we lost. But later on, we won. So I learned pretty early that Willimantic had a lot of voting going on. And there are these New England thing called town meetings where, one time we just showed up with 30 people probably, and we won everything. It was like, oh my goodness, we just totally were able to control this town by going to one meeting. And anyone can do that.
Uh-huh.
So it's very, very, it makes you feel like you have power, empowering, but also that you can make a big difference. And so with a smaller town like we live in, you can make a huge difference, and it only takes 30 or 40 people. Here's a vote that's coming up next: whether to build a parking garage in Willimantic. You know, we've probably needed one for years. It costs a lot of money. There's a lot of debate that should be going on. It's going to be decided so far, unless this changes, at a town meeting where if you show up with 30 people, you're going to win.
Wow. So interesting. Yeah. So everybody out there listening, you need to get to your town meeting so that you can have your voice heard and bring your relatives and your friends and your coworkers.
One time I brought Eastern students and the people in town were horrified. They're not really residents. Well, yeah, they are. Yep.
Wow.
So students have a lot of power.
So you started doing this when you first arrived in Willimantic.
Right. Yeah.
And it's thanks to your softball team.
Softball team got me involved. Yep.
So one thing led to another, and you got more and more involved.
Right.
And
so then I got involved in running for office.
Mm.
And that was partly coming from my, I would say, my electrical background, in that I saw things that are wrong and I needed to fix them. And I can't just keep sitting there and letting things be wrong, right?
Okay.
We can fix this. So I ran as a Green Party member, and that was a challenge because at that point, nobody even knew there were other parties. Uh-huh. So I would go and talk to somebody and they would say, yeah, okay, great. You got my vote. You're a Democrat, right? And I'd say, no, you're a Green. But and they go, but you're a Democrat, right? And I go, no, it's not the same thing.
Uh-huh.
And we'd go around and around and they go, you mean there's, what do you mean? Democrat or Republican? Which one are you? So that was like, you know, 6 or 10 years of educating people.
When was this and what position were you running for?
Oh, I ran for town council usually, which is at that point Board of Selectmen. At that point, it was a first selectman position. And I ran for that, you know, probably three. I think I did finally get it the fourth time that I ran. So that would be after 8 years of
wow.
Of
so you didn't give up. You really wanted to do something and,
yeah.
and be involved in the actual politicking in the town.
Right. And but, you know, when a new person would get that job instead of me, I would, you know, take off for a couple of years and try to give them space and do it. And if the results weren't the same, then I would get back involved because they weren't doing things that I thought should happen. And I'm always right, right?
Uh-huh. So what are some of the things that you thought should be happening? Give me some concrete examples.
I don't know if you're familiar with the Garden on the Bridge.
Oh, yes, I know that.
Okay. The state built us our Thread City Crossing, the Frog Bridge. And then there was this old stone bridge, which was built in, like, I think 1840 or something, which I just look at and go, how did they do that? But the state said to the town, do you want the bridge? And the town wouldn't accept it. And they gave us 10 years. And they said, you got 10 years to take this bridge or work, and then we're going to knock it down.
Wow.
And the town wouldn't accept it. And they would not, and they wouldn't. And they came with crazy ideas, and we made the design. Volunteers, not me. Actually, UConn Landscape Architecture designed the whole Garden on the Bridge part. The town engineer was totally opposed to it. He came. One point he said, if you put trees and heavy things on top of the bridge, it'll collapse. And we got an engineer from UConn who said, no, the stone bridge wants heavy things on it. That's what keeps it together. We need to put stuff on that bridge as heavy as you can. I was like, oh, okay. So anyway, you know, that was like scary. We actually went to the first selectman's office with 5 people and met with him and told him we really, really needed to do this bridge after this is like year 8 or 9. And that was scary. I never was comfortable going into the office of these very important people, even though I was running against him. Right? I didn't talk to him. So anyway, we got that. We did get it done. But why should it have taken so long? Why should it have taken so much energy and anxiety?
And so it was actually done by a lot of volunteers. Not many people were actually physically paid for any of the work that was done.
Oh, no.
There.
Then it was paid for.
Okay.
Yeah. It was the volunteers maintain it, though. The Garden Club is the maintenance department. But we got money to do the planters.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was one project, and then you moved on to something else.
Yeah. So how did Third Thursday start? So I was running for office yet again. And I said to a friend of mine, you know, I just need something different. I don't want to be running on the same old stuff that everybody else is. Okay, with too much garbage on the streets and people are driving too loud and there's, you know, whatever the issues are. What do we do that's good and positive? What can we come up with something new? And he happened to go to San Diego and he came back and he said, we should have a street market. I said, that's a good idea. You know, we had thought of things like that, but so I campaigned on that and I lost. It was very interesting, though, because I was campaigning on it and people were looking at me like I had two heads.
Uh-huh.
They had never heard of such a thing. Mm-hmm. And younger people were like, why would I go downtown? What's downtown?
What year was this and what was Willimantic like at the time? You got to kind of paint a little bit
so
of more of a picture.
Probably around 2001 or two.
It was very depressed at the time, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Was
it not?
Exactly.
A lot of abandoned buildings and things.
Absolutely. So the malls had opened, the downtown had shut down, and that was exactly the motivating factor. It was like, this town is going to just die if we don't do something to introduce the new generation to the downtown. And the older generation still remembered when it was thriving and everybody went downtown on Thursday nights. So we had to have the event on Thursday. So anyway, I lost.
Oh, hold on a minute. What's the thing on Thursday nights? I don't remember anything.
Before our time, Thursday night was shopping night.
In Willimantic.
In Willimantic.
This is when the mills were really bustling and everything.
Yeah.
People would just parade around town. And
absolutely. And they just saw all their friends. And everybody was just like parading around downtown. Exactly right.
So that is the core of why it was on Thursday.
Thursday.
Ah, interesting.
Yep, yep. So I lost the election, which is good. And then I, typical, I'm not too chartered. So I take a pottery class, right, with some friends. And we're doing pottery. And Tom keeps saying to me, when are you going to start this market, this street market thing? And I'm like, I didn't win the election, Tom. I don't have to do that. And he kept saying, when are you starting it, Gene? So I'm there in my pottery class with three or four friends. And I said, Tom keeps nagging me that I should do this street fest. And they all went, we will help.
And wonderful.
They dropped everything and helped. And it was an economically depressed time. A lot of people were out of work. So we were all unemployed. And I was able to get some really good qualified underemployed people to help. And so we probably started the idea, well, the election was be in November, and we put it together for the next May.
You said 2001?
Yeah, 2001 was the election probably, right? And then 2002, this fest started in May. So we put it together pretty fast. And, you know, when you have a good idea, because I said publicly, I think at a town meeting, town council meeting or whatever, and said, we should have this street fest, and I was trying to get the Board of Selectmen to let us close the street. That took a lot of meetings, but it also got us press. And I had just a public meeting at a bar.
Perfect place.
You know, Victorian
the
lady.
Public.
Victorian lady. And people showed up. And I thought it was going to be a farmer market. And in fact, Alice from the co-op gave me a book on how to start farmer's market. And I was following directions. And the farmers were not interested. This was before the local farmers really took off. And they're like, no, we don't want to do that. So then I thought, oh, the artists. Let's get the artists involved. And the artists are like, no, we don't go paint on the street and things. No, thank you very much. And then, but the people who came to the meeting were musicians. And they said, oh, we're going to set up stages all over the street. And I was like, okay, that sounds good. So it was about being flexible. I had a vision, but it wasn't a firm vision. And so it was able to just happen very much organically from our community. And it was what our community had to offer, was music.
So you started it at a town meeting, and then you ended up having organization meetings.
Exactly, yeah. But I kept having to go to the town. And I was, this crazy questions like, are you going to charge the vendors? You know, you have to charge the vendors. And we went, okay, we'll do that then. That's a good idea. course we're going to charge the vendors. That's how you make money or how you pay for it.
Right. So how much did you charge the vendors the first year?
I think it was $5 or something, you know.
Something just affordable.
We wanted them to come. And I wanted people to, and I still do, try out your new business. If you have an idea of what you want to go into business as, try it out here. See if people buy it. See what the reaction is, right? That has happened to some extent. Something that grew out of the Street Fest was the Swiftwaters Artisans Co-op. And that was somebody, I was at a meeting with Len Krimmerman, and just a small group, three or four of us. And he said, you know, well, what could we build that's a cooperative out of the Street Fest? And I said, the artisans, they could easily start a storefront. And a friend of mine said, well, how would you do that if you wanted to do it? And we just walked down the street and knocked on some empty storefronts and said, how much to rent it, and found a place. And we did it for 1 month in December. We called it December's Artisans.
So it was like a pop-up?
A pop-up. Yeah, before pop-ups, it was a pop-up. And people just came and helped paint the walls. People came with furniture and shelving, and they just like, yes, we're going to make this happen. And then the artists started coming in, and it was so much fun because that we were already open by here, right? So it's only a month. So we're open, and somebody comes in with, do you know what flattles are?
No.
Okay. It's basically wine bottles that they melt down and flatten out and use them as cheese.
Oh, right. Yes, I remember those.
So somebody comes in with this basket with these things in it, and she goes, do you think you want to sell these? And we're like, I don't know. What are they? And we pull them out, and we sold all five of them before she left the store.
Wow.
So that's the kind of thing that was going on in December Artisan Store. Everything we picked up and looked at, people went, I want that. And they would just take it out of our hands and buy it and leave. So it was a very big success.
So, but that was right after the first Third Thursdays had finished the season, correct?
Probably after the second year.
Oh, it was after the second year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so that was so successful that we turned it into a cooperative called Swiftwaters Artisans Co-op. It took them about a year to get that all planned, at least a year.
So, and that's been around for quite a while.
Yeah.
It's a great place to go if you want to do some Christmas shopping or buy a unique piece of art or something.
Yep. Decorate your home a little bit, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And jewelry, of course, and pottery, things that you would use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's sort of an indicator. We always talk about how revivals or renaissance of a town happens through the arts first.
Yeah.
That the artists move in and then everybody else starts moving in. So I felt for years that Willimantic was sort of like an artistic hub, but things weren't really happening. It was still stagnant.
Yeah, and it's hard to make it happen. Even in a town like Mystic, people come and look. How many people actually buy?
Right.
And you need that. You need the shoppers because that gives the ambiance. But, you know, people don't buy $500 paintings very often.
Right. But Third Thursday, I always felt, was a great draw. I was always surprised at how popular it was, you know, that people would really come out in droves. And I think at the height, there were like 7,000 people at least coming, you know, on a Thursday night, filling up the street. And that's pretty incredible for a town that really suffered through a very long sort of depression.
And when you think we only have a population of 15,000 in the city, so for 7,000 to come out and play, we were attracting people from Boston.
Uh-huh.
We were attracting people from all over the region because it really was kind of the first of these street fests in the area anyway.
So explain to me, for example, the week leading up to the fest and the day of the fest. What kind of stuff? What were the nuts and bolts that had to happen and who was involved?
It's hell. It's still hell.
So tell me, explain a little bit.
Yeah. It's very stressful. You know, you almost need one of those kind of people who don't respond to stress.
Uh-huh.
So you spend a lot of time ahead of time, which we're starting now, signing up vendors.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are all set. But then you have to place them in the street in the right places. And we're really careful to not put somebody who's in conflict with the store. So you don't want to sell coffee in front of the coffee shop.
Right.
So we really
map
it out carefully. And then you don't want the same things next to each other, but you want complementary things. So do you want two jewelers close together? Yes, probably if they're, you know,
if they're different enough from each other, I would say.
Yeah, if one is doing silver and another's doing beads or, but then you don't want to put, I don't know what's called, commercial stuff next to a fine art.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to keep them separated so they're not competing.
Mm-hmm.
And they attract a different audience. So it's about, okay, let's try to get some good artisan vendors in this area and some food here. Always struggling with, you know, do you put all the food in one place like a mall does? Nah, because we want people to walk throughout. We want to have ice cream on both ends. So mm-hmm. that takes a lot of time and layout.
So you're doing this in a meeting, and how many people are involved in those early meetings of planning meetings?
Yeah, right now we've got down to mostly on the computer and just a couple people at the end, just figuring out where people go. They're signing up online, filling in their forms online, sending in their money. And then we promise the vendors will tell them where they're situated by Tuesday before Thursday. It's always Mother's Day weekend that we spend hours. It used to be four of us for like 2 days sitting there trying to do that. We've got it down better than that now because the vendors who come back, they don't want to move.
So they stay in the same place. And you shuffle things around them.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have the general areas laid out now.
Uh-huh.
This year, we're going to try to open up a new food vendor area because food trucks, when we started, there really weren't food trucks. We had tables and local churches.
So now it's food trucks moving in?
Yeah. So food trucks are in demand,
I
should say. So to try to attract a younger crowd,
right,
they're looking for that grilled cheese chuck or whatever it is, barbecue. So we're going to start putting the food trucks in a certain area.
Mm-hmm.
So they won't be competing directly against the little shops that mm-hmm. we have and the little, you know, tables from Tony's Pizza or whatever mm-hmm. and Sagrado Corazon, which is very popular.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want the competition, but we want them to attract more people.
So you're really dealing also with a lot. I mean, obviously this is a local event and I would say 80% at least are local people who are involved in the vending and all that.
Yeah.
It's not people from very far away. It's an opportunity for them to sell their wares.
Exactly. We prefer that. And we discourage vendors from too far away because the other thing we do the day of the festival is people from out of town say, "It's raining." I'm like, "That's Waterbury, not Willimantic."
Oh.
They don't want to drive out here for 2 hours if it's going to rain and be canceled. Especially
right.
musicians with electrical stuff.
Right, right.
Or
oh,
vendors.
I see.
The vendors
I
have
see.
Expensive things that they don't want to spend 2 hours driving out here
right.
for a three-hour event and 2 hours
right.
back. And then getting hit with a rainstorm.
Uh-huh.
We can't tell you what the weather's going to be because it's summertime and it's going to rain every day. And that's also true with the musicians especially. So we've really made a point of trying to... Our goal is to have one-third rock and roll, kind of whatever, classic type blues, jazz, and one-third ethnic music, and one-third Hispanic specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not able to meet this goal, but that is the goal still. The problem is, like, when you're going into the ethnic groups and stuff, you're reaching out, and,
mm-hmm.
and they're coming from farther away,
mm-hmm.
and they don't really want to hear that it might rain.
Uh-huh.
So it's challenging that way, and it's also challenging because it's more expensive usually. If a salsa band has 8 to 10 people, I can't hire them for $200.
Right.
You know, and you can easily get a local rock band to do that, or kids, or...
I appreciate the idea of having a diversity in music because Willimantic is definitely a rhythm and blues kind of town, and I like to hear something a little different.
But I like the blues. Absolutely right. We do a lot of that. My mother came once, I don't know, let's say it was 10 years ago. And so she walked up and down the street and said she had a great time. And I said, "So what kind of music did you like?" And so she's describing it. And she says, "There's this band over there. I like them a lot." And it was reggae. So who knew my mother liked reggae? And that was like one of the joyful things is people because we don't say this stage is the Spanish stage, mm-hmm. this stage is young kids stage, we mix it up. And you're going to have to walk by it, and you might find something you really like.
Right, and you do walk by. You listen for a little while, then you move on, and you listen to somebody else. And, you know, if you really like it, you stay for the whole show. And if you don't, you just move on to the next band that's down the road
bit. Right. So that's part of it. We do put a program together. That's something else we're busy on the week before, because now we've figured out what the vendors are and where they're going. We try to put this program together at the last minute.
And when you talk about the program, it's the musical program or
it has all the vendors and it has all the music.
Oh, I see. The program, like a physical program.
Physical schedule. Mm-hmm. Because people actually do say, where's this band? And you have to have the answer.
Right, right. Yes, I noticed that at one point that you had a printed out program that you could look at.
Yeah.
So what happens the day of? Because you can't close the street until
5 o'clock.
So at 5 o'clock, what happens?
Oh, so then all the vendors have very specific directions. They're supposed to come down this street and turn that way and then park somewhere there. It's actually orchestrated. And then we have what we call block captains in each block. And those people are there to answer the questions and tell the vendors where to go and resolve little conflicts by saying, you can move over a foot. We're not going to kill anybody over the foot.
Yeah.
Right? Because otherwise they think they're restricted to exactly the spot. And the other person's in their spot. I'm like, don't worry. Just we'll all just shift a little bit. It's very flexible. And then that really happens very well. And so...
Because at 6, it starts at 6,
it
right?
Starts at 6.
Within an hour, everybody's set up.
Everybody is set up. Everybody's placed. And that's about 6:15. I look around and I go, no one's coming. It happens over and over. People do come. But nobody comes that early. Why don't they come early? But it's just this moment of panic. We're all set up and there's no customers yet.
Yeah. So you have the police involved.
Yes. The police are paid for by the town of Windham.
And you have the firemen involved too, do you not?
Yes. The town of Windham's hiring them for some reason.
And do you have like medics involved as well?
No.
No medics.
Mm-hmm.
But they're on call.
Yeah. They all know about it.
Uh-huh.
The recreation department used to do a bounce room. They're not doing that anymore, though. Public Works is there. They close the street and make sure things are neat.
So at 5 o'clock sharp, everything is closed, blocked off for all the vendors to set up and everybody to get ready.
And then the health department runs up and down the street to see all the food vendors and make sure that their food is the right temperature.
Oh, and they go around with thermometers?
And then you can start. You can start. You can start.
So, wow. Yeah,
absolutely. Because they tell them you can't
That's
start
great.
Without that. Yep. The fire extinguishers are in place.
Uh-huh.
And then... Yeah, and then we start selling the beer.
All right. And you have a lot of volunteers.
Yes, never enough. Uh-huh. I have to give great big kudos to Kohl's. This is something I had no idea about, but Erin, who's now the event coordinator, works at Kohl's, and they volunteer. And when they volunteer, Kohl's gives money.
Wow.
To back it up, which is phenomenal. So
that's generous.
Yeah, so we've had like 10 kids and young adults from Kohl's at a time helping out, which is great, big help. We also have help. When it started, most of our volunteers were from the Hotel Hooker, and from the soup kitchen.
When you say the Hotel Hooker, but when was that open?
Was it open then? Yeah.
Oh, was it? Actually, I remember people hanging out in the front area.
Yeah, we all went in there one night when it rained. But yeah, so most of our volunteers were people who were unemployed, right? And we're willing to help and move tables and chairs and things like that. People in the community like that. I actually got an award once from, I think, the No Free Shelter for allowing and encouraging all the people in the community to help out.
So you have a lot of the homeless people who pitch in?
Yeah, yeah. More so in the past. Now we deal more with through the structure, if you would. So like reception programs has houses, people are in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
We found that randomly taking anybody, sometimes they had drinking problems.
Yeah.
And we have cleanup at 9 o'clock. And that was the challenge, was trying to get people who were sober for cleanup. So we're definitely still using community people. And it's really interesting because often they're people from outside of Willimantic and they've never been to a street fest. So they don't know what this is. And they just know that they're getting out for the night, right? And then they're like, wow. wow, you do this? This is so great. And it's just so nice to hear the reaction from people who have never been before, who think and understand. This is so special.
It is special. It is. And so, yeah, talking about the cleanup, at 9 o'clock, you
all
have
the vendors have to shut down. We don't have very good lighting on Main Street. So things like jewelry vendors, they're, when it starts to get dark, they're starting to shut down because they don't want... Well,
issues.
They're not going to sell anything.
Right.
Because people can't see unless they have a lot of their own lighting. So, and then usually there's a few ice cream trucks still trying to sell till 9:15. And the police department helps by going around and telling everybody they have to close up. So, yeah, 9:30, usually they're shut up and off the street, maybe 9:45. They try to open the street by 10.
Mm-hmm.
We have to go and get our trailer and our and a truck, and we go up the street and we pick up all those tables and chairs that we had put out. Yeah, and so that's like a whole other crew of four to six people.
And what about the garbage? Because, I mean, obviously there's overflow garbage and stuff.
Yeah.
Or is that a problem?
Public Works has been so excellent. Public Works gets up at, like, I don't know, 4 a.m.?
Yeah.
They sweep it and then they wash the street.
And you do have a lot of garbage containers and
yes.
recycling receptacles
so
and stuff like that.
That's a whole other issue. So we've tried, and I think moderately successfully. We used to have a lot of barrels that that was a whole other job, was to put the barrels in the middle of the street. And then we decided that we wanted to do composting. And so we've set up stations where we're asking people, all the food vendors have to have compostable plates. And we're asking all the people to bring their food, leftover food, which actually there's not much of that, and plates to these recycling areas, compost areas, which you call waste not. And then we tried closing off the garbage cans so that they wouldn't use them. But I think that we've kind of given up on that because it's really just impossible. So we're going to compost. We're going to keep composting. And the food vendors have been very cooperative. And I think the state laws are changing, which will make it easier for us to legally compost the compost.
Mm.
But it's not as much waste as you would think. Plastic is really the main thing you just can't get rid of. And it looks like most of it gets burnt. So it ends up in the garbage. So one time, people are so cooperative. I guess it was the end of the season, probably 2 years ago. I stood there and I had a composter. I had a plastic thing, and I had other recyclables, like cans and stuff, right? And the nickels. So I was in the beer garden guarding the gate so people don't leave with their beer. And all their cups, all the beer cups were to go into this one plate. And everybody came up to me with their stuff and said, where do you want me to put this? And they all were so cooperative. And then we found out that all this separating was going in the garbage. Into the incinerator.
It's unfortunate,
But we keep our compost, so.
Third Thursdays happens starting May.
And it goes to September. When we started, it was October.
It's
dark the whole time. I liked that. But other people didn't.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a totally nighttime event.
And it sustains itself through the vendor fees, what you collect from the vendors?
Yeah, probably a third of its vendor fees, a third of its contributions. So we asked businesses, or actually Kohl's has given us a couple thousand dollars last year.
That's
total,
great.
I'd say. We had gotten some small grants. We really don't get much of that. And there's nobody to apply for it. If anybody wants to apply for grants for us. And then the beer garden, sales of the beer and wine.
Okay, so that goes directly to the pot.
Yep.
Whatever's doesn't pay for the beer goes into the pot.
Yeah.
So that's a third, a third, a third.
Pretty much.
Interesting. How would you say Third Thursday has affected Willimantic and the community?
Very positively. I think the image, and it's an image outside of Willimantic and inside, people really didn't think very highly of our community, ourselves. And so I think people got a lot of a positive boost out of that. Outside of Willimantic, I was working with somebody when I started it, the very first year, an electrician. And so he's watching me do all this phone. Thank goodness there were cell phones. They were just starting out. So he's watching me do all this work, and I'm talking about nothing else except for what I'm working on, and I'm not thinking about electrical work. And he's like poo-pooing it. And then a couple of years later, I saw him, and he said, "Oh, Willimantic has really changed." And he's from the other side of the state. And I was like, "Why do you say that?" He said, "Oh, I read about it in the paper. I keep reading about all these great things that are happening." So, yeah, people outside of our community were reading about Willimantic and saying, "Wow, a lot of things happening there." It's kind of proven challenging over a long time to keep that up because it's not a news story anymore. So it's hard to get in the media the way we used to. But it's still, I think, very unique that it's so volunteer-driven and so organic to our community. Putnam has great First Fridays, right? And it's so funny because I hear, "Why can't you be more like Putnam?" Right? And then people in Putnam go, "We want to be more like Willimantic," because everybody wants what they don't have. But it's different communities. So they're different festivals, and they're going to reflect the people there. And that's what it's supposed to be.
In closing, a couple of things. What would you like to give as far as advice for people, any type of people, young people, older people, to get involved in their community? And the second thing is what you would like for people to do with regards to Third Thursday.
To get involved in your community is interesting because I think the first time I got laid off, as an electrician, you get laid off a lot, I really didn't know what to do with myself. And I thought there must be something. And now I have so much to do. Like, oh, please take some of this off my plate. In a community like Willimantic, and I think it's true with most small communities, we have to get out of our own way of our head thinking they should do this or they should do that. As soon as you hear yourself saying, "Why isn't this happening? They should do it," you should understand you should do it. And that's what will happen. If you make that happen, it will happen. And you can. So stop waiting for someone else and them and just do it. And that's what I learned from my good friend, Kathy Clark, who started the Boombox Parade.
Mm-hmm. Which is another great event in Willimantic.
Right, right. And she said, "No, I want to have a parade. We're going to have a parade." And she just started it.
And it's become a real deal. It's written up in so many places. It's a
sure.
very unique parade, and it's very well attended by people from Willimantic and beyond.
And far beyond.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you have an idea, take your idea and do it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And as for Third Thursdays, being one of the organizers, what do you need at the moment, and what would you like people to do to help you out, or what?
We need actual organizers. So, for example, Erin is the event organizer, but she's actually in Florida right now. So I need somebody local who can do some legwork, which isn't that much, but it's like going to the storefronts and things like that. There's also the day of, this is more than day of, I shouldn't say it that way. It starts before, volunteer coordinator. So all the people who show up to help need to have a person to go to. We need block captains, which is not a hard job. You spend an hour before every festival, then you go to the festival. But we need people who are part of our problem is physically aging out, right? People who are able to stand up for an hour and walk around.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not that hard. Or have a chair, wheelchair.
Well, you would want also young people to get involved.
Definitely.
It's not just...
Absolutely, yeah. That's what I'm saying. We're kind of aging out. We're looking for younger people. Yes, you're right on. If this is going to keep reflecting our community, we need younger people involved. And we need people of different ethnic groups involved. It shouldn't just be old white ladies.
Enough of those old white ladies.
Enough of them. Where's the hip-hop music, right? But uh-huh. That's probably old-fashioned. So I don't even know what I'm talking about. And that's exactly the problem. We're so old, we don't even know what it is that the younger people want and need. I can remember when my friend's kids told me, "Oh, that's for old hippies. Nobody young goes there." And I thought, let's see what we can do. And I found somebody, another friend whose son was in a band. And I said, "Would your band play?" And he's like, "Whoa, we can play on Third Thursday? Yeah, you can play." So they played the first time and they were setting up and there weren't that many people around. And as soon as they hit the first note, like 500 kids came from I don't know where. stormed that street and had a great time. He went on to become a musician, but it was like, yeah, that's what we needed. All of a sudden it was cool for the kids to come. And then we went, oh no, there's all these kids here. Now what do we do?
Well, I mean, I think it's great, and you need to have such diversity in all you budding artists and musicians,
yes,
and
yes,
cooks and who knows what. You know, you have a venue. You have to just contact the Third Thursday people.
Yeah.
And
so it's www.willimantickstreetfest.com.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jean.
Thank you, Benny.
And get ready for the season of Third Thursdays.
Yay. We're getting ready.
Well, this interview was recorded literally 2 days before UConn closed its campus due to COVID-19. As I wrap this up, I've discovered that Third Thursday won't take place in May. Regardless, when it does get going, it's definitely worth a visit. So, if you don't know it, head on over to Willimantic on a Third Thursday sometime before the end of September. Check it out. It's a lot of fun. It's local. Just head to Main Street and you'll find it. That's where everybody hangs out on a Third Thursday in the summertime. I'd like to thank the staff and students at WHUS Stores for shepherding me through the process remotely. Next time, I'll be speaking to Andrew Goot of Cafe Mantic. Hope you tune in.